Hello, and thank you for joining me today. My name is Sasha Goldstein, and I'm the CTO of Sela Group and the Microsoft C# MVP, and I'm going to talk to you today about mobile services as well as Node in the afternoon. So mobile services, as you probably have seen in Scott Guth's keynote, is one mobile backend for all your mobile applications on Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, iOS, and soon Android as well. And this backend runs on Windows Azure, and it's scaled by Windows Azure. And it's really easy for you to get started with the free tier and then scale your application to multiple servers, multiple virtual machines when you're ready, when your customers demand it. So in this talk, we're going to build, or see how I built, the same application called Rent-A-Home for four different platforms, for Windows 8, for Windows Phone, for Android, and for iOS. And I'm going to walk you through all the details of how mobile services are implemented and the various features they offer. And I'm not a very easily excitable guy. So I like garbage collection. I like reverse engineering. I like assembly language. And mobile services has got me more excited than anything out of Microsoft in the past few years. This is really cool technology that really makes it very easy for you mobile application developers to have a backend implemented for you on Windows Azure. So what's in the box in mobile services? As Scott told you earlier, there's data support. Your data is backed by a SQL Server database, which can be the web or business edition, and you can manage it separately. So it's a full-blown SQL database that's abstracted away for you by the REST mobile services. And when I say data, I mean you have tables, columns, dynamic or static schema. You have the full capabilities of SQL Server enabled for you, including indexes, foreign keys, if you want to manage the database at that level. There's push support, which is very, very important for mobile applications today. And currently, there's push support for Windows 8 and for Windows Phone 8. And I'm going to be showing you this push support later today. But there's also push support coming for iOS soon. And when an Android SDK is out, I expect push support to be implemented there as well. So it's going to be very easy for you, without having to deal with the different push notification services, to push data out to your users when changes occur on the server. And I'm going to show you exactly how you can take your server scripts, which manage your data and are kind of like triggers, to send push notifications using the various platforms that currently are supported. And then there's authentication support, which is really, really important. You don't want to be managing users and passwords, usernames and passwords these days. So instead, mobile services gives you a very simple API, which I'm also going to show you, for authentication using Microsoft account, Google, Twitter, and Facebook, and possibly other providers will be coming up later. So with the push authentication and data across all these different platforms, you can easily build your mobile application and focus on the client. You don't have to think about server-side code. You don't have to think about provisioning virtual machines, managing hardware, hosting, scaling. This is all managed for you, and of course scaled and supported by Windows Azure, which is more than capable to handle the load of your mobile apps. And then, as far as SDKs go, currently there's a first-class SDK for Windows 8 and Windows Phone. The Windows Phone SDK was just announced a couple of weeks ago at Build, with Windows Phone 8 announcing. And then this SDK supports C# and VB.NET, so the managed .NET languages. There's also a REST API that you can hit the mobile service with, and I'm going to show you how you can do that from the command line to easily manage your assets and mobile services. And there's an iOS SDK that's currently in preview. It's not done yet. Actually, the whole mobile service offering is currently in preview. But the iOS SDK is something you can start using today, but it only supports data and authentication and not push. And for Android, there's currently nothing official. So I've just gone ahead and rolled my own Android SDK that only supports data. There's support for hitting the REST endpoints mobile services provide for accessing your data tables, updating, querying your objects. I haven't implemented the whole offering yet, and I expect, of course, this SDK of mine is going to be replaced by more official offering soon. And of course, there's server-side scripts, which is really one of the strongest points of mobile services. When you need to do something on the server as a result of changes in your data, such as a new entry being inserted into a table, a new client connecting with support for push notifications, you can have a simple script written in JavaScript run on the server. And that script can access virtually every HTTP service out there. It can use push notifications, and there's support for many other things. There's a question coming up right now. Can data schema be declared in code, including relationships, and sync automatically when the app runs? Well, I'm going to show you exactly how you declare your model, but the schema is dynamic. So if you add a new property to some object and then insert an object of that type to a table, then a column is going to automatically be added to that SQL Server table that supports your objects. But then in production, you can turn off dynamic schema so that accidental changes or typos in column names are not going to create duplicate or excess columns in your database. Now, as for relationships, there's currently no support for complex relationships, but you can implement that manually, and I expect more things to be announced in this in the future. But currently, it's very easy to get started, and all you have to do, really, as I'll show you later, is create the table, and then populating with columns is going to be done automatically for you. So let's take a look at some of the APIs before I just switch over and show you some demos. So for data, for accessing data tables, you've got the Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 SDK. And then this SDK is really convenient for C# or VB.NET developers because it gives you support for link. So you can use link to query your data. You can say stuff like, please give me all the apartments where the number of bedrooms is greater than 2, and turn that into a list of apartments. And apartment here is one of my data model classes, which are plain old CLR objects, no interfaces, no base classes. That's just a plain object you can use for other purposes in your data model. And you'll notice here that the API is asynchronous, as pretty much every API in the Windows 8 and Windows Phone SDK that has the potential for blocking. So I'm using the await keyboard here, to wait for that to complete without blocking my application thread. And then on iOS, the APIs are slightly different. For instance, the tables are not strongly typed. So you can say get table apartment, and that apartment is a string. And you get back an instance of a class that can be used to query your data. And then you create an NS predicate. And again, the predicate is just a string. So you say bedrooms is greater than 2, and run a query, read where, with completion, using that predicate. And again, this is an asynchronous API that's going to give you an array of results as soon as the query completes. And now for Android, I've just rolled my own SDK, which is synchronous, unfortunately. It would be easy to add callbacks later, but for now, you can say service get table and say exactly what class you want. So it is strongly typed, just like the C#, the Windows 8, and Phone SDKs. And then you can say apartments, please give me apartments with more than 2 bedrooms, and that will go to the server and fetch for you a list of apartment objects. So these are kind of the APIs for interacting with data. And insert, delete, and update are all very similar as well. So on Windows 8 and Phone, they are synchronous. On iOS, they are synchronous. And in my Android SDK, they're synchronous. And now the cocktail glass is there because that's what you're going to be doing after, you know, taking 10 minutes to implement all your data support using mobile services. There's another question by Ashley. Is this data stored offline on the mobile devices too? And currently, it's not. So you could implement your own caching layer, of course. But for now, every time you access your tables, every time you perform a query, you're going straight to the server and back. It's a REST call to the server. So another feature supported by mobile services is push, as I mentioned. And for push, you have to establish a channel first to allow the server to actually push updates to the device. So that push channel on Windows 8 is really easy to obtain. You just use this very long API, push notification channel manager, create push notification channel for application async. Phew, that's a long API. And then you get a push notification channel, which has a URI property. And that is what you send to the server, store on the server, so that you can push changes to that client. And on Windows Phone 8, you've got a slightly different API. And also, there's a difference between sending toasts as push notifications and performing tile updates through push notifications. So the code example on the slide here creates a push notification channel called apartment push channel, opens the channel, and binds it to a toast. So if your app is pinned to the start screen of a Windows Phone 8 device, then you'll be able to send toasts as push notifications to that Windows 8 device. Now, the one little thing here that you have to be cautious about is that the server-side APIs for sending push notifications are different across Windows 8 and Windows Phone. And likely when iOS and Android push support will be introduced, there is also going to be a difference in the APIs. So for instance, if you want to push to a Windows Phone, you'll use the MPNS object in your server-side scripts and say MPNS send toast with a channel URI obtained from a client device, the title for that toast notification, and the content of that toast notification. And for Windows 8 devices, you'd use the WNS object, which has a slightly different set of APIs, and also Windows 8 supports a greater variety of toast formats. You can embed pictures in a toast, you can have several lines of text, or just one line of text with a title, and so there are more options for you to choose from. But this actually means, and that's kind of annoying actually, that you have to track on the server whether a particular channel belongs to a Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8 device. And the same thing is going to be probably going forward with iOS and Android. So this is not very complicated to track, of course, but you do have to track the channels as well as the type of device for that channel. And of course, you're welcome to cache more data on the server, such as the user that which represents that device, which represents that push channel, the user's location if you want, and additional data, as long as you can somehow retrieve it from your mobile app. So this is push. And authentication support, finally, is also very, very easy. I think I'm most proud for the team of that feature. So on Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, to authenticate, you first check whether there is the current user property on your mobile service client is null. And if it is, you simply call a single asynchronous method called login async, which takes an enum. And that enum has four values: Microsoft account, Google, Twitter, or Facebook. And when that completes, there is an asynchronous flow going on behind the scenes, and the user gets a dialogue for inputting his credentials. But after that completes, you get a user object back with a user ID. And every subsequent request to the server is going to have that user ID embedded in it. So you easily know for each operation which user initiated that operation. And as Scott showed you earlier in the keynote, you can limit access to certain tables or to certain operations on tables to only authenticated users. Or you could say, if I'm trying to update an object that was created by this user, then only that user is allowed to update it. So you can do stuff like that based on the user identity that's flown from the client to the server as soon as this authentication flow completes. And on iOS, this is also very, very similar. So you can say, if the client current user property is nil, then you use the login view controller with provider selector, which takes the name, a string of the name of the authentication provider, and a completion block, which will give you an error if something went wrong, or an MS user pointer, which you can then use to determine the user ID. So these are some of the APIs with mobile services across the platforms. And again, it's really, really easy to get started with mobile services, but instead I've just built an app that I'm going to show you right now. So enough slides, and we're going to see a considerable amount of code. So I'm going to get started with my Windows 8 application. So I've got my Visual Studio right here with a Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 solution. And if you look at the model I have here, I have an apartment class here, and I have a channel class here. These are my data model classes. And so apartment, for instance, is decorated with the data table attribute that says the name of that data table on the server is going to be apartment in lowercase. And then it's got some properties. It's got an ID property, address, published, number of bedrooms, and physical coordinates for that apartment, as well as finally the username who actually created that apartment. So this is my data model. And on the server, I have to create an apartment table. So I'm going to switch off to the Azure portal and show you just how exactly you can create a new mobile service. So this is the Azure portal. And under mobile services, to create a new service, you just go ahead and say new compute mobile service create. You choose a URL for your service, a database, and the region, and a subscription, of course, and off you go. But I've created my own rent a home mobile service in advance. This is the dashboard for my mobile service. There's also a quick a quick start here, which Scott showed you earlier, where you can easily just download an iOS, Windows Phone, or Windows 8 project, Visual Studio project, which is already configured with everything you need to start building your own mobile service. But instead, I've just built these already for you. Now, under data here, you've got the tables. These are coming from SQL Server. There's a separate schema in my SQL Server database called rent-to-home, which has two tables, apartment and channels. So if we look at the apartment table, it's got three apartments in it right now, which are an apartment at Times Square with seven bedrooms, another at my hotel here in Redmond with one bedroom, and another in the Tower of London with one bedroom. And for some of these, you see the username is unknown user, which is just a placeholder value. And for some, it's the actual username who created these apartments. Another thing here is push. So under push, I've got the client secret and package security identifier for my Windows 8 application. This allows me to push data to my mobile Windows 8 apps. For Windows Phone, there's no such configuration required. Now under identity, I've got my authentication providers. So I've got my Microsoft account authentication, Facebook, Twitter, and Google. And all I've got right now is just the Twitter authentication settings, which I easily got from my Twitter app. So you have to go to developers.twitter.com, create an app, a Twitter application, and then get this consumer key and secret from there. And so you can use authentication to authenticate your users. And now under configure here, you've got your SQL database server, which is a separate SQL Azure database that's managed for you, the dynamic schema property that you can turn on and off, and under scale here, you've got the really powerful capability to switch from shared mode to reserved mode, and then say, I want this instance size with that many instances, and also scale your SQL database server from the web edition to the business edition, which gives you up to 150 gigs of database storage. So these are a few things you can configure in the portal. And one more very important thing is diagnostics. So you've got logs here for operations on the server that fail. For example, whenever I send a push notification, I log a message if there was some kind of error delivering the push. And I'm going to show you the script for push a little later, but for now, this is how you actually debug problems in your server-side scripts. So let's take a look at the actual code for my Windows 8 app right now. This is the apartment model, which I've mentioned earlier, and this is the channel model, which has the type of the channel, which is going to be Windows 8 or Windows Phone, and the channel URI that I'm going to be using for push. And now, in my app XAML right here, I create an instance of the mobile service client class, which takes two properties. It takes the name of my mobile service, the actual REST endpoint to my mobile service, which is rent-to-home-azure-mobile.net. And the second parameter here is my application key, which I got from the Azure portal. And whoever has this application key can now connect to my mobile service unless I change security settings on the server. So this instance of the mobile service client class can now be used for various operations. For example, as soon as I've established a push notification channel right here using the create push notification channel for application async API, I have now the channel URI I want to insert to my mobile service database. So I go ahead and say mobile service get table, and the generic parameter here is channel, which is my model class. I get back an instance of the iMobile service table interface, and I create a channel object, which is again just a plain old CLR object, nothing particularly special about it, and I say insert async. And that goes to the server and inserts that the channel object into the table on the server. And this is the example of acquiring a push channel and inserting it. Other interesting parts would be dealing with apartments, and that's right here. So when I need to query the server for a list of apartments the user has access to, I can just say, well, mobile service get table, and this time the generic parameter is apartment. And I can issue a link query right here. So I can say, I want apartments for which the publish property is equal to true. And well, it's important to actually have this equals true part in there, because there's a minor bug in the SDK, at least at the time of writing, which would not parse the expression correctly if you omit this equals true part. And then finally, toList async converts the results of this link query to a list of objects. And there's a very important thing to be aware of here. Not the entire table is coming back to the client. So the query right here, for instance, I only want published apartments that haven't been unpublished yet. This query is translated into a URI. The URI goes to the REST endpoint of the mobile service. And the mobile service then translates that filter, my filter I've specified here as a link expression, this filter is translated into a select query that runs inside SQL Server. So only the objects you actually need are transmitted over the wire. The whole query runs in your database. So you're not just fetching all the objects and then doing the filtering on the client side, which would be a great waste of bandwidth and computation time. So this is retrieving apartments. And to insert a new apartment, well, here's the code for that. So I go ahead and create a new instance of the apartment class. I populate a couple of properties, like the address, the number of bedrooms. And then I just use the insert async method again, this time to insert an apartment into the apartment table. And for delete, there is a very similar API right here. And updating an apartment is also very similar. And now finally, for authentication, as I've shown you on the slide, this is also very easy. So you just go ahead and say mobile service login async with your mobile authentication provider, and that gives you back a user object that you can now query for the user ID. And that is flown to the server with every request you make from that point onwards. So this is the Windows 8 app, and let me just run this thing real quick. Here it is. There are my apartments, Times Square, Silver Cloud Hotel in Redmond, and the Tower of London. And I've got a nice map here provided by Bing Maps where you can see my apartments on the map. For instance, here's the Tower of London apartment. And I can add a new apartment right here, One Microsoft Way, Redmond, with 5 bedrooms. I go ahead and add it. And I got a push notification right here that says a new apartment has been added, One Microsoft Way, Redmond, with 5 bedrooms. So the push support works, and I'm going to show you the client script soon, which enables this. And as for login, this is also very easy. So I just click this login button, and now I get the Twitter login experience. Again, this is code I haven't written myself. This flyout here is displayed by my mobile service. And if I authenticate as John McUser with a certain password, it's just a fake user I've created, then that's it, I'm now logged in. And if I add another apartment here at 2 Microsoft Way, then you're gonna be seeing it here as added by John McUser. So this information on the username is actually fetched on the server side and put back in my apartment object when the insert operation completes. So for all I know, I'm John McUser, but only the server has the actual name, the username. And the server can also retrieve additional information about the user from the Twitter API. So this is the Windows 8 client. And there is another question right now. Ashley, how about inserting related tables data? So as I've said earlier, there's no current support for complex relationships. You could go ahead and insert the first object, get its ID, and then insert another object which has a property of type int, like a foreign key. But that foreign key relationship would not be established in SQL Server. So that's just a relationship you manage. And again, I expect support for this to show up at some point, but presently, you have to manage this kind of things yourself. So let me just show you the same thing with Windows Phone. I've got another solution right here called Rent-A-Home Windows Phone 8. And the apartment class right here and the channel class right here, they're actually exactly the same. And the only reason I wasn't able to share them in a portable class library is this data table attribute, which is part of the mobile services SDK assembly, which is not a portable class library. But the data member attributes, for instance, could definitely be part of a portable class library. So if I omit this data table attribute, then the name of the table is just going to be channel with a capital C, but that's perfectly fine. And then I can actually put my model in a shared portable class library that I can use across Windows Phone and Windows 8, which would be a very good idea. So I've got the same data model here. And in AppXAML, I've got pretty much the same code to initialize a mobile service client with my with the name of my service and the API key. I've got pretty much the same code for inserting the push notification channel into my push notification channel table on the server, except the part that actually initializes that push channel, which is different across Windows 8 and Windows Phone. But inserting is exactly the same, only the type is now Windows Phone 8 and not Windows 8. And I need this on the server to track which API to use to send out push notifications. So everything else is pretty much the same. And I want to show you this thing in action. So I'm going to switch over to my little document camera right here. And I'm going to go to full screen. So this is my Windows phone. This is the Nokia Lumia 920. And I go into the Rent-A-Home application. Well, there's lots of fingerprints on this. And I get a list of apartments. Is the wireless on? Yeah, I should get the list of apartments and a nice map showing me these apartments. Oh, the app has crashed. Let's just try this one more time. So I should see I should see a list of apartments showing up and the map, but there's probably something wrong with the wireless connection. So I'm gonna have to keep this for later. Oh, there they are. Here are my apartments. Just took a little time. So I've got my apartment in Redmond, and another one at the Tower of London, and another at 1 Microsoft Way, and another at 2 Microsoft Way. And I can go ahead and view them on a map. This is really hard to see right now, but there are my apartments right here. And I can zoom in, and I can click one of them, and it's going to show me a pop-up of just where this apartment is, and zoom the map. And I can also add a new apartment straight from my Windows Phone app. Now, if I leave the Windows Phone app and go to my Windows 8 app for a second and add a new apartment from here, then if I'm quick enough, you're actually going to be able to see the toast notification. So let's go for 3 Microsoft Way in Redmond with only 3 bedrooms, add. And now I switch very quickly back to my Windows Phone device. And here's the toast notification right there that says a new apartment has been added. And if I click that toast notification, it takes me back to my app and eventually shows me the new apartment that's been added. So this is push support working across two different types of devices. So here's 3 Microsoft Way right there at the bottom, 3 Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington. That's the apartment I've just added from Windows Phone, and it's been pushed to my Windows 8, to my Windows Phone application. So added it on Windows 8, and it was pushed to Windows Phone, and it will also work the other way around, which is really impressive. So this is my Windows Phone application. And at this time, I'd like to show you some of the server-side scripts in the portal, which are required to implement push and additional functionality in this application. So if we go to the data tab here, we've got the apartment table and the channels table. And in the channels table, I have right now all the push channels for my 2 Windows 8 devices. There's also a Surface tablet lying here right next to me, which I just might show you later, and my Windows Phone device. So I've got 3 push notification channels for my 3 different devices, and I've got their type right here. Now, whenever my app starts up, it actually gets this push notification channel anew. And it might get the same channel every time. So I don't want to pollute this table with a large number of channels which are all essentially the same, which have the same URI. So instead of having on the client to retrieve all the push channels and then enumerate them and see if the channel exists or not, instead of doing that, I can have a simple server-side script for the insert operation. And that script is responsible for making sure I don't insert duplicate channels into my table. So right here in my insert script, I can say channels, this is the insert function, actually. It takes the item being inserted, which is the channel object, the username, the user identity for that request, which is flown from the client if the user is authenticated, and a request object, which I can use to determine how to respond. So inside my insert script, I can go ahead and say tables get table channels. This gives me a channel table This gives me a channel table object. And on my channel table object, I've got a where function, which only lists objects that have a URI property set to item.uri. And I issue the read function here, which on success will call the insert table if not found callback. And in that callback, I get a list of existing channels. These are channels that would match this query. So for these channels, if there is an existing channel with that URI, I simply respond to the request with response code 200, not 201. 201 would mean created, and nothing was created here. So I just respond with a generic OK status code. And I return the existing channel object as the payload of the response. So the client can now know that this object actually already exists. And otherwise, if there is no such channel, then I just go ahead and say request execute, which would run the default logic for that request. And in our case, that would mean inserting the object into the table on SQL Server and then responding with the 201 status code, which says created, and the actual channel object that was inserted. So this is an example of a very simple server-side script for the channels table. Now here for apartments, I've got a much more complex insert script, which is actually more difficult to maintain. And this script does three things. The first is making sure that the username property of the item being inserted, of the apartment being inserted, is actually the username of the authenticated user. So I get the user object as a parameter here, but it only gives me a user ID, not the user's actual real name. I could also retrieve a profile picture or location if I wanted to. So I go ahead and say, if the user has a Twitter identity, so if we're authenticating with Twitter, then I can go ahead and say, this is the Twitter ID. This is the Twitter handle for that user. And I can go ahead and hit this API, this endpoint for the Twitter API, apitwitter.com/users, and my Twitter ID and .json. And that's going to give me back a user JSON object from Twitter, from Twitter API. And to make the actual HTTP request, I use a module here, which is called request. So you'll notice this is not just plain old JavaScript. This is Node. This is actual code that runs in a Node application. So mobile services are built on top of Node. And that's something I'm going to be talking about in my other session today, about how you can run Node apps on Azure. So the request module can actually perform a request to that Twitter URL. And if everything's successful, then I have the response body logged to my console log. I parse that response body, and the username is just a simple property for that user, for that response body. And after I've got that, I just set it on the item object. This is a parameter of my insert script. This is the item being inserted. And so if I populate this property right here, that's going into a column called username in my SQL Server table. So I can dynamically add columns like that. And then I call continue processing, because there's more I want to do except just retrieve the username. Another thing I want to do is issue a geolocation request to translate the apartment's address to a pair of coordinates. Now, why am I doing this on the server side? I could have just as easily on Windows 8, on Windows Phone, on Android, on iOS, translate the address into a set of physical coordinates. But why would I do that four times? I mean, I have four platforms to support, so I'd have to implement that four times with four different APIs. Instead, I do it on the server. So as far as the server is concerned, it gets the address property on the inserted item. And it goes ahead and hits the Google Geocoding API right here, Google APIs, Maps, API, Geocode, JSON, with that address. And if everything is successful, then inside the response body, I've got the actual physical coordinates for that apartment, for that address. So I can take them and, again, put them in two columns on two properties on my inserted item. And that's, again, dynamic schema. These columns are just going to be added if they don't exist yet. So latitude and longitude are now populated as a response from the Google Geocoding API. And finally, the third thing I want to do in my server-side scripts is send push notifications if everything was successful. So for push, here's the send notification function, which goes over, again, the channels table. We've seen pretty similar code earlier. And then for each channel, I use the read function here to get the list of all channels. And for each channel, if the channel type is Windows 8, then I use the WNS object to send my push notification. And I use the send toast text 04 function, which takes the channel URI and three additional fields. This is the title for my toast. This is the first line of content. And this is the third line of content. And so if the channel type is Windows Phone 8, I have to use a slightly different API, which is the MPNS object. So I use the send toast function here, which takes the channel URI, a title for my toast, and the actual contents. And in both cases, if something went wrong, I'm going to have in my logs this notification that something went wrong, and I can actually debug it later. Now to answer a couple of questions, one from Jeff Martin, any way to get the code after the presentation? Definitely. I'm going to post everything, including the server-side scripts, on my blog. So stay tuned for the end of the talk, where I'll give you the details. And another from Geert, I hope I have said it right. Can you send data into a table and send push notifications from an Azure worker role? Well, this is just a REST endpoint. So wherever you have HTTP client access, you can use mobile services. You just have to issue REST HTTP requests. And as for these MPNS and WNS modules, they're also just a light abstraction on top of a REST API. So wherever you have HTTP client access, you can send push notifications, you can perform inserts into a mobile service, you can do authentication using mobile services. All of these features are supported from anywhere where you have access to a REST client, which is really everywhere these days, on-premises, Azure worker role, web role, node application, website, whatever you feel like, even a JavaScript app running on the client. OK, so these are the server scripts. And so far, we've seen a Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 demo. So let's move on to Android and iOS. So here's the iPhone simulator. And let's just run the app real quick. The first thing it's going to do is log in with Twitter. So I'm going to say here, my username is, again, John McUser, and my password. And you can actually see my password, which is why I'm not using my real Twitter handle here. So I'm going to sign in. And now I've got my list of apartments right here. And I can go ahead and unpublish some of these apartments, like all the new ones I've just added. Or I could go ahead and insert a new apartment. Let's say Jerusalem, Old City, Jerusalem, Israel. Old City, Jerusalem, Israel. Three bedrooms. And I'm going to hit add right here. And if you're quick enough to notice, it should also pop right in my Windows Phone app. There was no toast because the app was already open. But the apartment actually showed up. There it is, Old City, Jerusalem, Israel. And it also showed up in my Windows 8 app. So this is working from iOS as well. And I'm going to show you quickly the backend code for that iOS app. I'm not a very good iOS developer, but it was still very, very easy to get started with mobile services using the Star project, which I downloaded from the portal. So the one thing I've got here is creating the actual MS client, which is the class that wraps the mobile service. And I've got my application URL and my application key right here. Both of them are here. And then I can use the getTable selector to get the apartments table on that mobile service client. And then I can do stuff like, well, let's query for published apartments. So I use this published equals yes predicate and run the readWhere selector, which takes that predicate on the table, issues a query to the REST endpoint, and gives me back an array of results if everything was OK or an error if one happened. And similarly, I've got insert right here, which is very easy. I just have a dictionary of key value pairs that I'm inserting into my mobile service table. So I'm just inserting it here with a completion block. And similarly, to mutate an existing apartment, I've got this item, which is, again, a dictionary of key value pairs. I update the published property to the value no, and then I use the update method on the mobile service table to update that apartment. And authentication is also very similar. I've got authentication right here. Using the mobile service client, login view controller with provider selector, I can just go ahead and say authenticate with Twitter, and upon completion, give me the MS user object. And again, that's going to flow to my server on every operation. So we're a little short on time, so I'll stop here at the iOS SDK and show you the Android app as well. So let's go ahead and switch to my Android device right here and run the rent-a-home application. So straight away, it's showing my three apartments, and I'm going to refresh that because we've made updates since. So here are my current three apartments, and I can also show them on a map. And here's, for instance, the one in Redmond. And I can go ahead and add a new apartment from here. And again, it'll just going to have to trust me that it's going to send a push notification to every connected client. So how was this Android app implemented without an official Android SDK? Well, I just had to roll my own. But basically, since everything is REST-based, it's very, very easy for you to just implement your own SDK for every mobile platform and for server-side platforms as well. So before I show you code, there's another question here. Server-side scripts can only be coded in JavaScript. Is there a possibility this can be coded in assembly in C# and then uploaded? Well, currently, server-side scripts can only be edited, managed, and run from the portal. And they can be only implemented in JavaScript for now using a whitelist of node modules. So currently, it's just JavaScript. You can't write this script in C# assembly and upload it to the server. But in most cases, the server scripts are simple enough, even if you're not a very good JavaScript developer, like myself, to implement on the server. So let's take a look at the Android SDK right now. And this is something I'm proud of because I actually had to implement it from scratch. So I've got here a project called WAMS Android, which again, I'm going to put online after the talk. And here I have a class called apartment. You've seen these before, right? So this class implements serializable, which is not strictly necessary. I only need this to pass this between activities, but it's not necessary in the sense of mobile services support. And then I've got annotations very similar to C# attributes. So I've got a data table annotation here, a key annotation, a data member annotation, which map the fields of that apartment class to columns in the table, and the whole apartment class is mapped to the entire apartment table. So with that said, this is the class. And to use your mobile service from Android, all you have to do is stuff like, let's see here, create a mobile service object right here, which takes the mobile service URL and the mobile service API key. This is, again, very similar to the C# SDK. And then you say get table and get back an object, which is of type mobile table. And notice it's generic. It's specialized for your type. So it's everything is strongly typed, unlike iOS, where everything was based on key value dictionaries. So here, everything is strongly typed. And then you can go ahead and say, for example, right around here, if I have a new apartment I want to insert into that table, I just say apartment table.insert. And if I want to delete an apartment, I just go ahead and say delete it. And if I want an update, then just update. So this apartment object is now a first class mobile service entity. And finally, to retrieve apartments, I've got this Fluent API going on where I can say apartment table where I want published apartments. And I can also say right here that I want the bedrooms property to be larger than 2. So I only want apartments with more than 2 bedrooms. And this just adds another part to the filter that's being sent to the server, to the mobile service, and then to the SQL server as a select and where filter. And finally, I only get back the apartments I'm interested in. So the actual SDK is inside the WAMS Android assembly, where I've got the necessary annotations, such as data member, data table, key. I've got the mobile service class, which is a very, very thin wrapper that only is designed to give you back instances of your mobile tables. And I've got a mobile table class, which is where the actual heavy lifting is going on. So here, it's not very long, but it's mostly dealing with REST endpoints. So it's going to hit the REST endpoint for the Azure Mobile Services to do insert, delete, update, and select. And all these are right here. So I create URL connections, configure some headers, issue a request, get back a response, parse it, turn it back to objects, or vice versa. And because this is just REST, I want to show you a final thing, which is, again, very cool. So if I go to my mobile service, in the data table, I've got a few apartments. And if I'm going to give this talk again, I probably want to delete some of these. Now, they're not published. Some of them are now not published, but they're still here. By the way, I unpublished them from the iOS app. So now I want to delete them all together. So they've got IDs, 77, 78, 79. And I can go to the command line right here. And I can say curl. And the verb, the HTTP verb, is delete. And I've got the xzumo application header, which is the application key right here. And then I'm just hitting the endpoint, rentahomeazuremobile.net/tables/apartment/77. So I hit that. And now if I go back to my table, this apartment is gone. And similarly, I can delete number 78 and number 79, which I don't need anymore. So at this point, I've only got the three apartments I've started with, and the two I've started with, and also the one at the old city in Jerusalem. So you see, this is all just HTTP. This is all just REST. And I can very similarly insert a new apartment. And I just have to try that. So I'm going to issue a post. And I need the same header right here. Okay, and the endpoint is going to be rentahomeazuremobile.net/tables/apartment. That's the endpoint I'm posting to. And I'm going to need some data. And my data is an apartment object, which is it has a bedrooms property with a value of 4. It has an address at, let's say Tel Aviv, Israel. And it's got a published property whose value is true. Now, actually, this is not going to work because of the quotes. So I'm going to put double quotes here and here. And let's just hope this works. Okay, content type, application type, So I need another header right here, which says that accept application JSON and content type application JSON. Right, and now, okay, so there's still a problem here. Let's just reformat it real quick. I promise it's going to work eventually. So I'm going to add double quotes here and single quotes around this whole expression. I'm sure this is just shell nonsense, but still. So yeah, this is my apartment. And it's been published. Yes. And I've got a push notification right here. A new apartment has been added. And this has just happened from the command line. So it's time to wrap up, actually. We've seen many things about Windows Azure Mobile Services. And this is a really cool API, really cool service that's very relevant for mobile developers today. Because you want to focus on your business logic on the client side. You don't want to implement HTTP services, REST endpoints, deal with databases, manage them, create tables, manage the behavior of these tables, manage push and authentication. These are dealt with for you using mobile services. So if there are any more questions, I'm still open for a couple of minutes. And if not, I just want to say thank you very much for joining me today. I have another talk on Node at 4:15 Pacific time. This is my Twitter handle and my blog, where I'm going to be posting some of the slides from this talk, as well as the code samples, server-side scripts, and everything else. So again, thank you very, very much.